Hi, good morning, everyone. I just want to thank everyone for coming out on this Sunday morning, really before Pesach. Thank you so much for all being willing to learn this morning. Let all who are hungry come and eat. All who are in need come and partake in the Passover festival. These are the words that begin the main portion of the Passover Seder, which we'll recite in just about 1 week. If you look at source 1, the statement begins, Halach ma'anya diachalu avsana ka'ara de mitzrayim, kol dichvin yete v'yecho, kol ditrich yete v'yitzach. We say, this is the bread of affliction, which our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Let all who are hungry come and eat. All who are in need come and partake in the Passover festival. Now it's interesting, this part of the Haggadah always struck me as kind of strange. After weeks of cleaning and preparation, days of cooking scrumptious but deliberately chosen and prepared food, everyone, from grandparents to small children, are finally seated around a probably intricately set table. We're about to ask the four questions and tell the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim and get the Seder underway. But first we raise the matzah and make the declaration, Halach ma'anya, this is the bread of our affliction, and we invite anyone who needs a meal to come in and join. And it always struck me that an invitation at this particular moment was a bit disingenuous. For most of us, even on that rare occasion where on Seder night you brought someone home from shul, at this point you've probably squeezed in every last dish, the third spoon for every person, the fourth cup that everybody has, right? There is no room at this point to invite somebody in. And I have actually heard there are those people who have the custom at this point of opening the door and saying this aloud. But most of us, I think, have the tradition, we're seated around the table. So who is it exactly that we're inviting to our Pesach meal at this point? What hungry guest is going to come in at this, you know, moment in your Pesach Seder? Again, you're making it to your already assembled Pesach meal. Furthermore, the term v'yifsach, as in kol ditrich yetei v'yifsach, all who are in need come v'yifsach, may be referring to actually coming and joining in the eating of the Karban Pesach, of the Paschal Lamb. But the halacha states that actually the only people who are allowed to partake in the Pesach offering were those who signed up to be part of that particular group in advance. What would happen is a group of people, right, a chabura, kind of would go in on a single animal, which they would all partake and share. And anyone who was not part of this group before Pesach began was forbidden to partake of that animal. So what is it exactly that we achieve by making the statement, let all who are hungry come and eat, all who are in need come and partake in the Pesach festival, or alternatively, in the Karban Pesach, at the beginning of our already assembled Pesach Seder? And I want to return to that question at the end of this morning's lecture. So after the four questions are asked, we answer them by recounting the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim, and we say, Avadim hayinu, we were slaves in the land of Egypt to Paro. What is interesting to note, however, is that nowhere in Sefer Shemot, in the story of our enslavement, in the story of the Exodus, are Bnei Israel ever referred to as avadim, as slaves. Except for a small subset, the taskmasters, Bnei Israel are again never themselves referred to as avadim, as slaves. Paro's servants and ministers, on the other hand, are called avadim, slaves. And on that, Rav Shalom Carmi points out that Egypt was not necessarily only home to Hebrew slaves, but was a Beit Avadim, as it is called in the first of the Esaret HaDibrot, a house of slavery, a society in which bondage was pervasive on all levels of society. And again, in the majority of places, even outside of Shemot, there is one exception in Devarim, in which the experience of the Exodus is recalled, Bnei Israel are not referred to as Avadim, but as Gerim, usually translated as strangers, sojourners, proselytes, a term I think this morning that requires further exposition. And actually, the very first time we ever hear that B'nai Israel are going to be in the land of Egypt, very famously in the B'rit B'nai B'tarim, in which God says to Avram, if you look at source number 2, that his children would be enslaved, it said, Vayomer la'Avram yado teda ki ger yezarecha be'eretz lo'lahem ba'avdum b'inu otam, etc. Your children, Avraham, will be gerim in a land that is not theirs, and they will subjugate them and afflict them. The term avad is used in this pasuk and in the next pasuk as well, but it's an active form. It's not an identity marker. Right? Avadim would be an identity. But instead, what is Abraham told? Not that his descendants would be avadim, slaves, but that they would be gerim. Abraham's descendants, his seed, would need to undergo the experience of being strangers. But why? Somehow God felt it so necessary that having experienced Gerut would be part of our national identity, that we would be called Gerim, that was fundamental and integral to nation building, that God told Abraham about it all those years in advance. Why? Why did God think it was necessary for Israel to experience exile? Why did they need to experience what it meant to be a ger, which is, again, something I think quite different from an eved? And I think that in order to answer this question, we need to take a closer look at the biblical usage of the term ger. Now, when I first became interested in this question, I took out this small book that was somebody's dissertation on this topic, and for the life of me, I cannot find it again. So some of these categorizations come from that. I'm continuing to do my research to find the name, but I did want to just say this topic of categorization. I'll get to my theological interpretation at the end, but the categories of interpretation come from this dissertation. If you are interested in finding it after, I will definitely let you know. We can be in contact, because I'm determined to find it again. Now we know that in modern Hebrew, and actually in rabbinic Hebrew, the term ger refers to a convert, a proselyte. But if you look through Tanakh, the Bible does not seem to have the same kind of conception of conversion, which we now think of today, and which the rabbis later developed. And so the term ger in Tanakh is not referring to a convert specifically. And that's not unusual. We know that words don't have the same meaning, and that words can develop and change over time. Right? The most clear example is the word awesome. Today when you say, everything is awesome, it has a very different connotation than it did hundreds of years ago, where it more emphasized the all aspect of awesome as opposed to the amazing, right, aspect of awesome, which it means today. So words can change over time, and they're still related. There's still a relation to their original meaning, but they don't quite imply the same thing. We're going to look at very particular instances when the term ger is used in Tanakh, but broadly speaking, if you were to look up the term ger and try to extract what exactly is this category, broadly speaking, the ger is an anonymous figure in theoretical situations. It's not a particular person per se, but a legal status that is applied to a group of people. And if you look again at the sources, which we will, in some instances it's clear that the ger is a foreigner, someone who had settled in the land of Israel and who had been assimilated culturally and hence religiously. There are other times when the ger appears to be a fellow Israelite from perhaps a different tribe who had a slightly different tradition or law, as God knew that would happen, right? That within our small communities, as we've seen Judaism develop over history, different communities have different minhagim and ways of interpretation and practicing of law. And even in biblical times, this would have been applicable. We know that after the Assyrian exile in the year 722 of the Northern Kingdom, many people from Northern Israel, which we know developed a different set of minhagim and law practices, then the kingdom of Yehuda in the south, many of them came down into the territory of Yehuda and would have had slightly different practices, even though, again, they're also Jews. So again, sometimes the ger is clearly a foreigner from another land altogether, but it also might have been a fellow Jew from a different shevet that was now resettling in your particular community or territory. So if I had to define the ger, here's how I would say it. The ger is not someone who is a native to the particular area, culture, or legal tradition in which he or she currently finds him or herself, and he is thus isolated physically, emotionally, and religiously. I'm going to say that again. Okay, the Ger is not native to the particular area in which he finds himself. He's there, or the culture or the legal tradition of the people in which he currently resides, and he thus finds himself isolated physically, emotionally, and religiously. And I think, as I'll try to develop in this morning's lecture, the term ger maintains a fluid definition. Stranger, outsider, other. Because every generation of Jews would have to deal with different gerim. A different set of strangers, outsiders, others, who could so easily slip through the cracks of an organized and established Jewish society. But before we get to who the Ger is fully, how are B'nai Israel, according to Torah law, supposed to relate to the Ger? There are, of course, exceptions, but I think, based on this dissertation, that most of the references to Ger in the Torah can be divided into two major sections. Two major groups. One, group number one. These are laws that are addressed to B'nai Israel in particular for the protection of the Ger. In this group, the Torah is trying to establish Israelite, B'nai Israel's solidarity with the Ger through laws that are given to protect the Ger. Laws given for that command Israel to provide for the material well-being of the needy, amongst whom the Ger is included. That's category number one. Laws that are commanded to B'nai Israel for the protection of the Ger. And the second group, category number two, are those laws that are compulsory for both B'nai Israel and the Gerim in order to preserve the holiness of the community. So in the second group, the term Ger implies membership in the community, and thus the object, so to speak, of these laws is not the Ger per se, but the community. So what I'd like to do now is look at a couple of these sources inside, because I believe that within the various references to the Ger, one can see an emerging identity in B'nai Israel. So let's look at group number one. These are laws, again, that are addressed to B'nai Israel in particular for the protection of the Ger. Source number three. This is taken from Mishpatim. The Ger lo toneh. A stranger you shall not wrong. Velo tilachatzenu. And don't oppress him. Ki geirim hayitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. The psukim continue. Kol amana v'yatom lo tanun. You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. And Hashem continues. Because if you afflict them, they will cry out to me. And Hashem says, and I will be angry. Because I listen to the voices of the oppressed. Continuing, v'ger lo tilchat, v'atem yadatem et nefesh hager, ki gerim hayitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. God says once again, just a couple psukim later, and a stranger you shall not oppress, because you know, you understand the heart of the stranger, because you yourselves were strangers in the land of Egypt. In both of these references, which are found in Parshat Mishpatim, B'nai Israel are told explicitly, you cannot oppress the Ger. And why? Because you feel it. You know. You know what it was like to have been Gerim in the land of Egypt. And therefore, you cannot oppress the Ger. Very interesting. This Parshat Mishpatim is, of course, found right after the giving of the Esaret HaDibrot, of the Ten Commandments, of B'nai Israel standing at the foot of Mount Sinai, very soon after the Exodus. And it always struck me, why is Hashem so animate here about not oppressing the Ger, this negative commandment? Don't oppress the Ger. Why is it that God has to reinforce this a number of times and say, you know what it felt like? Because at this point in B'nai Israel's development, psychologically, right? What is Parshat Mishpatim really about? God is giving them a law code for building a covenantal society, which is functional, ethical, loving, godly. And at this point, the psychological status of this newly freed people comes to light. It is sometimes, unfortunately, and we've seen this throughout history, the natural desire of someone who has been abused to, at the first opportunity as a way of coping, become an abuser or an oppressor. Having experienced very limited access to power, to freedom, it can be overwhelming, and thus the desire and even perhaps compulsion to inflict suffering upon others, especially those who are in a weaker and more vulnerable place in society. And God is saying to them, this is unacceptable. As you build a society, it is your duty, your obligation to understand the others, because you know what it was like to have been in this position. And even though, again, you would think, you know what it's like, so why does God have to tell them? It's not enough. Twice, he has to emphasize, you need to listen to what I'm saying. And God actually threatens Bnei Israel in these psukim. I think for a group of people that are trying to carve out an identity for themselves, to formulate a new sense of self-understanding that is secure and stable, the easiest route, and we've probably all experienced this, is to identify an other. Right? The easiest way to construct a notion of who are we is to point out who's them. Who's the other? And construct our identity against someone else. To say, we are not you. And that's the psychological stage that Bnei Israel are at immediately following their own persecution at the hands of the Egyptians. And it's against this natural desire that God warns them. That's the presentation of Ger in the book of Shemot, in which again, God, for the protection of the Ger, is saying, you cannot oppress them. You know what it was like. The book of Vayikra, Leviticus being a way of life, scholars refer to a large section of it as a holiness code, actually begins to give over a number of positive commandments about the Ger. If you look at source number 10, this is V'charmecha lo te'olel, Uferet charmecha lo te'lakeit la'aniv la'ger ta'azovotem. Right, this is referring to in the next pasuk also is dealing with Peah and Leket, right, the commandments that actually when you have a field, a portion of your field, you have to leave over, the corners of your field you have to leave over. Why? It's for the stranger, for the poor people, leave it for them. That's again, more laws. And these instances, Bnei Israel are being commanded to care for the material well-being of the Ger. Why? Because we were an agricultural-based society. We know that land remained within Shvatim, within families. A Ger is someone who comes to settle in a land who doesn't have a piece of land to work himself. So how is he supposed to eat? So the Torah gives the commandment that who is supposed to ensure that the Ger has food? The community. It's the community's obligation, each landowner's obligation to ensure that the material needs of the Ger are being taken care of. It's the recognition that the Ger is going to find himself in difficult circumstances. No shevet, no natural protective structure, and that imposes an obligation on anyone and everyone to care for the Ger. But even more than that, if you look at source number 5 from Vayikra Yotet, V'chi agor itchager ba'artzchem lo tonu oto. Okay? If a stranger lives in your land, you can't oppress him. Good, we've heard that already in Shemot. But now, the next pasuk, Lamed Daled, Ke'ezrach mikem yelachem hager, hagar itchem, v'ahafta lo kamocha ki geirem hayitem ba'aretz Mitzrayim, ani Hashem Elokeichem. The stranger who lives, who dwells amongst you, shall be to you like one of those who are born amongst you. You have to love the Ger as you love yourself. For you were strangers, for you were Gerim in the land of Egypt. I am Hashem, your God. Here we have empathy in the truest sense. That is what God is calling on Bnei Israel at this point to have. True empathy. Not just don't do wrong to them. You actually have to figure out a way to get to a place of loving the Ger. It's a positive commandment. It's a move from not just don't do him wrong. It's movement to a place of love. And that's the ultimate goal. That the Ger actually becomes one of you. When you think we, the Ger is included in that we. So we move from Shemot to Vayikra. It's interesting, Bamidbar doesn't really, it deals with the experience of Bnei Israel in the desert. The focus is not on future society building. And at that point, difficult to know who were the Geirim while Bnei Israel were actually in the desert. Assumably almost no one, right? Because they all were sharing this common experience of revelation at Sinai and of moving through the desert. So Bamidbar doesn't really deal with the term Geir in that context because it's not applicable. But if you use that logic, it makes sense that where are we going to have the most number of references to the Geir? In the book of Dvarim. The word Geir in the book of Dvarim, which is concerned again about the future society building of Bnei Israel, the term Geir is found 21 times. 11 of those times, it appears in the triad of Geir, orphan, and widow. And we'll look at a couple of those sources. Again, we're still in this first category where Hashem is giving Bnei Israel commandments to look out for material well-being, to protect the Ger. So if you look at the first source here in Dvarim Yudalid, Miktei Shaloshanim Totzi Et Kol Ma'aser Tvuatcha B'Shana Ahi V'Nchaka B'Sharecha Vahalevi ki ein lo chelak v'nachla imach v'hager v'hayatom v'hamana asher b'sharecha v'achlu v'sevu l'mani v'recha Hashem elokecha b'chol ma'aseh yadecha asher ta'aseh. We have here, right, the giving of maser, and that who is to be included and beneficiaries of the tzedakah that Bnei Israel are commanded to give at this point. Yes, the Levi, but also whom? The Ger, the Atom, and the Amana. The Ger, again, is included in the category of people who are not going to be, who are going to be the recipients and beneficiaries of charity from Bnei Israel. If you look, continue, Parakav Dalid, Lo tatem mishpat ger yatom, v'lo tachbo b'ger amana. You shall not pervert the justice due to the stranger. Meaning, when you sit in courts of justice, it might be easy, and we've seen this happen to us throughout history, that you don't deal fairly with the other. Right? They're not considered on the same status. And if there was a disagreement between a ger and a member of Israel, your heart would be inclined to do what? To look more favorably upon your brother. But guess what, says God? The ger is your brother. And you cannot deal injustice in any form of injustice with him just like you wouldn't with the widow or the orphan. Next, Chavav, Ki Tachle La'aser Et Kol Ma'aser Tvotcha B'Shana Ha'Shlishit Shnat Ha'Ma'aser. Again, the same idea, V'Nitata La'Levi La'Ger Li'Atom La'Amana, etc. Again, in each of the above instances, humanitarian laws have been instituted for the helpless and marginalized people. Laws which reflect the need to care about the material well-being of those who cannot always due to whatever circumstances provide for themselves. As you create an Israelite society, says God, you need to look out for the marginalized people, for the people who are not going to fit in exactly into the communities which you are building. That is every time the Ger Yatom V'Amana, look out for them. They don't have, again, that natural protective structure which was so necessary in that particular context and society. And therefore, again, the laws for the Ger to give them material well-being, to treat them with justice. When the Ger appears outside of this triad of Ger, Yatom, V'Amana, he's not necessarily needy, but it's connected more with matters, and perhaps this is kind of a subset of this category, matters of religious and social integration. So this category, I would add in this small subset, yes, it's about the protection of the Ger and ensuring that justice is done for him, that his material needs are cared for, but more than that, there's a couple psukim and examples where what are we supposed to do with the Ger? To make him feel a part of our religious and social community. So if you look at source number 7, this is from the beginning of Dvarim Ratzavet at Shoftechem Beirahi Lemor Shmo Bina Aichem Ushvatem Tzedek Bein Ish Uven Echiv Uven Gero. Okay, so again, this is similar to that other one, but this is saying, I charge your judges at that time, recalling the previous source that we had, to judge righteously between a man and his brother and the stranger. Once again, God's just again retelling some of the previous laws of the Torah, and he reminds them, I'm just making this crystal clear in case you didn't get it the first time. The Ger is not to be judged as any different from any of you. In the next verse, this is from Parakeh, very famous pasuk, Shabbat. V'yom ha'shvi Shabbat l'Hashem Elokecha. We all know this. Lo ta'asek ha'mlacha ata u'bincha u'bitecha ba'abdecha ba'amatecha b'shorecha b'chamorcha b'chol b'hemtecha v'geirecha asher b'sharecha. Who is to be included in the celebration and the community establishment of the day of rest? The ger. He is a vital member, and therefore also it makes sense if you look at the next verse above. V'samachta b'chol ha'tov asher natan l'cha Hashem Elokecha u'beitecha ata v'halevi v'ha'ger asher b'karbecha. When you rejoice about all the good that God has given to you, you know who you have to include in your celebrations, in your joy, in your happiness? Right? Those who would be easy to leave out. Make sure that they're also a part of this. Now, Sefer Dvarim, interestingly, was not said to the generation who themselves had experienced Egypt. It was said to the next generation. They had not experienced the strangeness of exile, but they had it as part of their collective memory, part of their collective past. This was a generation of people who were ready to take their history, and this is really what Pesach is about, to take their history and allow it to shape their current identity, to develop an ethic of compassion, which would be the reason behind so many Torah laws. And so many of the biblical commandments are driven by this ethic of compassion. We use the narrative of our ancestors to inform our values. And this generation could internalize what happened in Egypt, but because they themselves hadn't experienced it, they didn't need to be told, don't oppress the ger. That wouldn't have been a desire. But to actively create an identity of an empathetic people motivated by a love for the other, known only by people who had some kind of common shared experience. They had this experience in constructing we. They had the whole experience of Mitzrayim, but it wasn't raw for them. And therefore, again, they were able to develop as part of their, kind of the foundation stone of their society, this ethic of compassion. And again, what motivates them is the love for this other with whom they had a shared experience as part of their very identity. Because B'nai Israel had the experience of having been other, of having been stranger, they experienced what it was like to have someone else construct their identity against them. The mainstream Egyptians were suspicious, we know that. Right? Havanet Chachma, right? Paro says, they're gonna join with our allies. They knew what it was like for people to not be sure who they were, what they're doing here, to have people talking about them. Where do they fit in? And Hashem says, you know what that was like. Your nation experienced that. Use that experience as part of your collective narrative and use it to move forward, to develop, again, this ethic of compassion when you yourself are building a society. So at the end of this category, who is the ger? The ger is someone towards whom B'nai Israel must show love, kindness, compassion, because they, the people Israel, know what it was like to have been treated without love, without kindness, and without compassion. Okay, that's category number one. Category number two, ger number two category. These, we said, are those laws that are compulsory for both B'nai Israel and for the ger in order to preserve the holiness of the community. And as I mentioned in the second group, the term ger implies membership, and the object of the law is not the ger himself, but the community. Because of the proximity of the ger to B'nai Israel, and B'nai Israel's desire to preserve their unique way of life, in many instances, not all, and there are exceptions which we're not going to have time to deal with this morning, but in many instances, ritual law is imposed upon the ger as well. There is one law in one community. So if you look at source number 8 from Vayikra, It's referring to different people who are bringing karbanot. And it says, let's skip to Pasuk Yud. Ve'ish ish mi beit Yisrael u'min hager hagar betocham asher yochal kol dam v'natati panai b'nefesh ha'ochelet et ha'dam v'hichriti otam mikar rama. Whoever is of the house of Israel or the gerim, if you eat blood, God is angry. The ger is told, not allowed to eat blood. He's also told in Pasuk Chet earlier, where is he permitted to bring a karban? Only in the place that God chooses him. Laws of karbanot, of eating meat, of bringing sacrifice. The laws are inclusive both of Bnei Israel and of the Geirim as well. Again, it repeats in Yudalim. Chinevesh habasar ba'dam hi ba'anin etativ lachem al mizbeach l'chaper al nafshotechem ki adam hu ba'nefesh yichaper al kein amarti l'bnei Israel kol nefesh mikem lo tochal dam v'hager hagar b'tochachem lo yachal dam. Once again, it keeps going over. Next pasuk, be'ish ish mi b'nei Yisrael, min hager hagar b'tocham, etc., etc. In all of these laws, what's going on? The particulars of the halacha apply, of the mitzvot apply, both to b'nei Yisrael and to the ger that is living amongst them. Look in the next source, Chaf Dalet. I'm trying to move through these a little quickly. V'nokev shem Hashem mot yumat. Right? If you blaspheme the name of God, you will surely die. Kol heidat kager ka'ezrach. Right? Whether you're a member of Bnei Israel or you're a ger or an ezrach, it doesn't matter. No one is allowed to curse God. That same rule applies to Bnei Israel as to the ger. If you look, very important pasuk Chaf Dalet and Parak Chaf Dalet, mishpat echad yelachem kager keezrachia kani Hashem Elokeichem. You will have one manner of law for the stranger as for the homeborn, for I am Hashem, your God. And I just threw this source from Bamidbarin. V'chi yagor itcham ger v'asa pesach la'Hashem kuchukat ha'pesach u'kemishpato kein ya'aseh chuka echat yelachem la'ger u'zrach ha'aretz. And if a stranger shall sojourn among you and will keep the Passover unto the Lord, he has to keep the same mitzvot as they relate to the Pesach as all of you. And again, I'm not going to go through all the examples, but skip in Perek Tetvav to Pasuk Tazayin, Torah Echad U'Mishpat Echad Yelachem V'Lager Hagar B'to Yitchem. One law, one ordinance, both for you and for the sojourner that lives amongst you. Now again, as I mentioned, there are a couple of instances in which this is not true. They require further exposition, but this is certainly true in the majority of the case. It's interesting also, I just threw in these other two last sources. One is that the ger was actually allowed to go to an ir miklat, right? If they were involved in a murder, right? That was kind of the city house. If you're an accidental murderer, you would run there. The ger was permitted to go there. And then the last verse I just loved also, if you look at Dvarim Lamed Aleph, Hakel et ha'am ha'anashim v'anashim v'ataf v'gercha asher b'sharecha l'man yishmu'unu l'man yomadu v'yir'u et Hashem Elokeichem v'shamru la'asod et kol divrei ha'Torah azot. Right, for Hakel, who was included, who had to come to hear the Torah read aloud in community, the ger was invited to participate in this as well. He was required to come and hear the law read to the community as well. In each of the above cases, the ger is considered a part of the community, and thus community standards must be imposed upon him as well. There is, as God says again and again, one law for Bnei Israel and for the ger that lives amongst them. In some way, this category, if we look at category number one, right, laws that were given for the protection of the ger, where he is often the object of charity, and these laws in which he is obligated, I think the second category dignifies the ger. And that he's not just the object of charity, he's actually a vital community member. So who is this ger? He is both subject and object. Sometimes a person from outside of the land of Israel who has settled in her borders, or members of different shvatim who have immigrated from other communities. Perhaps it's a landless class of people that slowly developed over time. But what I would like to emphasize is that the constructing a single definition for the word ger is almost impossible. In many sources, it seems to mean something slightly different. And I believe the Torah does that deliberately. It's an ever-evolving definition because as the situation of B'nai Israel in the world changes, the condition and identity of the ger in her midst changes as well. So the definition of ger must remain fluid because it will never in any generation be the same group of people. Ger originally designated a person in the Judean territory, maybe later in the Jewish religious community. So from the Torah's perspective, whoever these gerim, these strangers, these others are, there is a dual form of relating to the other. On the one hand, openness, empathy, love, compassion. And on the other hand, expectation, community, obligation. These are the two ways of relating to the ger. Israel must make the ger, the other, feel a part of the group by caring and empathizing with him. And at the same time, he is made part of the group by being obligated in the laws of the community. So going back to one of our original questions, why is it that we needed to experience being gerim in the land of Egypt? Why did we have to be strangers and others in a land not our own? So I think the Torah clearly itself provided the answer. B'nai Israel had to experience what it felt like to be an other, to be a them, to have a different group construct their identity against them, to be outside of the social fabric in which they could not be included. Before becoming a nation, a community, they had to know what it felt like to be outsiders, to be others, to be a them. Rav Soloveitchik says the fact that in Egypt the Jews were exposed to all kinds of humiliation, the fact that they were treated like objects, not people, is supposed to engender within us sensitivity and tenderness towards our fellow man. The Rav states that without the experience of exile, Israel would have remained, as he says, unexposed to suffering, emotionally vulgar and insensitive. The experience of having been an other is there to teach us that it is our obligation to include those that don't fit in. It is our obligation as individuals and as a community to invite the others, the them, the people who could slip through the social fabric that we are constantly creating and recreating in every generation and in every community, and make sure that they are included. And I think, as I was thinking about this recently, I thought, yes, on Pesach, our national experience of having been gerim, of having been others, strangers, not the masters of our fate, but dependent on others, is supposed to motivate our ethic of compassion. I found that at times today that could be difficult. We were gerim 3,000 years ago and certainly throughout history. But at this point, in the 21st century, having been raised in a beautiful modern Orthodox community where I had a lot of friends and supportive family, and I continued in a career in Jewish education, and I have friends who are non-Jews, and I went to graduate school and college and secular universities. That experience of being an other at this level is not something I personally felt that I related to. I feel like an insider. And it's an amazing experience living in America today, and in Israel certainly, where you can be insiders in so many different circles and move on some level, and not always, but you move somewhat freely. We've been very blessed in this day and age to be masters of our own fate. We're given jobs in all different types of institutions. We can build communities and buy homes. That feeling of otherness, while not completely gone, certainly not, doesn't feel as raw as these psukim seem to be describing it. And I was trying to think, how is it that we today can relate to this feeling, this very deep feeling of being an other, of not quite belonging, of loneliness, of isolation? And I think to this too, the Torah provides a slightly different answer. It offers, I said there were two categories, there might be a very small third. A model of Gerim in a couple of other places, where the Ger is not an individual person, where Bnei Yisrael are portrayed as the host of the needy, but Ger as the people Israel. Israel is portrayed, Bnei Yisrael are portrayed as the needy in search of a host. What does that mean? If you look at source number 9, this is taken from the laws of Shemitah. And Hashem says, "Va'aret lo timacher l'mitzutat ki li ha'aret, ki gerim metoshem atem imadi." God says you can't forever sell the land in perpetuity. You cannot sell the land in perpetuity, for the land is mine. For you, Bnei Yisrael, are gerim, are strangers, are others, are settlers with me. Here Bnei Yisrael are being told, you are Gerim. You are an other. In Psalm 39, very powerful and moving parak of Tehillim, jarring in its sadness and in the anxiety which it expresses, the psalmist says, here, I'll just read this in, "Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear unto my cry. Keep not silence at my tears. Ki ger anochi imach toshav kechol avotai. For I am a stranger with you, a sojourner as all my fathers were." Similarly, David HaMelech in Dvarim Aleph, this is a prayer that he gives, and he says also, "Ki ger manachnu lefanecha v'toshvim kechol avoteinu, katzel yameinu al ha'aretz v'ein mikva." For we are gerim, we are strangers before you, sojourners, as all our fathers were. Our days on the earth are as a shadow, and there is no abiding. So I was looking through these sources. They felt to me like they were expressing a certain anxiety about being a religious person in relationship with God. In these sources, being a ger is presented as being part of the human condition, because we are all gerim before God. What does that mean? We know that the experience of religion, of faith, is lonely. The person of faith is lonely. The Rav, in The Lonely Man of Faith, makes this argument so beautifully about how at times we feel so isolated from community. We feel that no institution, no synagogue, no group, and even no other individual human being can completely understand us. At times, the Rav writes, we feel thrust away by everyone and everything, so that the only solace and comfort we find is in God. And it is God's unique solidarity, because He is so alone, He's the only being in whom we can confide in these desperate moments. But what I'm actually suggesting is also, the opposite is also true. That sometimes, we feel we're the most vulnerable, needy, dependent, and unsure in our relationship, in the relationship we have with the Almighty, with God. The spiritual journey that most of us go on throughout our lives can be very destabilizing, make us feel out of sorts, bombarded by questions, emotions, doubt, suffering, emptiness. Right? This is what it means to be a spiritual and religious being. To at times struggle with God. To be unsure in that relationship. To feel sometimes lonely. To not know where to go from here. But at the same time, religion is practiced always in community. And it is within that community, I believe, that we can regain our footing. We share a rich tradition of ritual, imagery, symbolism, and texts that bring us together in spirit and deed. We worship as a single body. We celebrate, we mourn, we live our daily lives in religious community. We all experience the dual nature of the religious experience, that at times we feel as others, a sense of loneliness, a sense of insufficiency and smallness as we stand before God. And we've also all experienced the stability and warmth of community. Social orthodoxy is, I believe, an important half of the all-encompassing religious experience. But I think the loneliness, the sense of otherness we have in our quest for God, should inspire us to bring again a lonely and othered person into our community, to give him or her a place, a footing, a place of security, of stability. And once together, we have one law, one way of reaching God together. So again, we need to use that feeling of what sometimes, yeah, can only really be described as loneliness, of insecurity, of vulnerability in our relationship with God. And the stability and sense of community we have that keeps us grounded. And that needs to motivate us to bring those who on a daily basis feel othered, feel lonely, feel isolated, and bring them and give them the stability of community. It says in Sefer Devarim, it says, "For you are a people consecrated to the Lord your God. Of all the peoples on the earth, the Lord your God chose you to be his treasured people. And it's not because you're the most numerous of peoples that the Lord set his heart on you and chose you. Indeed, you're the smallest of the peoples. But it was because the Lord loved you and kept an oath he made to your fathers that the Lord freed you with a mighty hand and rescued you from the house of bondage, from the power of Paro, king of Egypt." These psukim are so beautiful because what they are essentially expressing is chosenness, a topic that might make some of us feel uncomfortable and that has been dealt with at length. But essentially what God says is, the reason I saved you from Egypt was not because you're so great. I saved you from Egypt because I loved you. And a love that was chinam, that was free. It wasn't based on anything. I just loved you. And this is the love we are supposed to have. Rav Soloveitchik says this is the attitude which we are supposed to have towards others. Rachamim, as we call it. Mercy, compassion, because that's how God relates to his people, and we are bid to imitate God. Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus, was God's expression of his love, of his choice of the Israelite nation. How we react, what we learn from that experience of being gerim, of exile, of persecution, how we react to that is our expression of the rightfulness of God's choice. So I beg us to consider, as we approach the Pesach season today, who are the others who could so easily slip through the cracks of the social fabric that our Jewish communities are building? Who is it that we must include in our celebrations this year in particular? Whoever they are, in your community, your shul, or even in our own families, we must invite them in. In every generation, one is obliged to regard himself as if he himself had actually gone out of Egypt. We experienced otherness and were chosen. We must choose the other and invite him or her in. Whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Whoever is in need, let him come and join in celebrating the Passover festival. When we look around our table at the beginning of the Maggid section of the Seder and make this very bold declaration, I don't think we are extending an empty invitation, but we're teaching a message to the children, to everyone at the table. We just said, this is the bread of our affliction. It's at this moment that we need to look around. We need to reflect and make sure that at our table sits those who are hungry, those who might be in need of feeling a part of a group. This is the declaration that we have fulfilled the obligation bestowed upon us by our experience of otherness in Egypt and the Exodus, the experience of our own loneliness in our spiritual and solitary journeys. We look around our table and we declare, we have invited the stranger. We have invited the other. We have not let anyone in our community slip by unnoticed. Everyone has a voice and a part to play. And as we remember our collective history together in community, practicing the laws of Pesach and the Seder, each individual offering his or her unique perspective, we create a chabura that is truly worthy of being free. And as our souls individually long for God, side by side, we create the true Passover, Pesach experience. Chag Kasher v'Sameach. Thank you.